A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, welcome back to The Commons. I'm your host, Brian Phillips. We are discussing a major issue as it relates to school life, whether you are a headmaster, a teacher, a parent, a board member, or even a student or homeschooling parent, and that is standardized testing. Joining me today is someone who has done a great bit of research and work in the field of standardized testing. I'm joined today by Jeremy Tate, the president and co-founder of the Classical Learning Test. We just call it CLT around here, as I'm sure most of you do. So Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Brian, for having me.
It's wonderful to have you on. We're talking about a very big subject. Standardized testing is really just sort of a way of life. It's part of the landscape of American education. I know I experienced it firsthand as a student, going through grammar school all the way through junior high, which kind of dates me a little bit, middle school now, right? high school, college, or college entrance. And many of us have seen our own children go through it, watching them either prepare for it or take their standardized tests. And at least for me, I have administered standardized tests as a teacher. And then as a headmaster or head of upper school, I received that big packet after it was all over with the results and had to filter through and answer questions from board members and the headmaster and parents and students and so on. So it is absolutely filling the American educational landscape. But that's not always been the case, right? You've been involved in some important research on the history of standardized testing. And that's one contribution that CLT has made, that, so it's not just making a test. But tell us a little bit of what came of that research. Can you tell us how standardized testing got its start?
Yeah, so we're, you know, really tying this to the launch of College Board in the year 1900, and the idea of a standardized test, especially with the multiple choice form that we all know, really we're talking just before World War I. And then the first time it was widely used was World War I, as they're trying to get a quick sense of who's going to be in intelligence and who's going to be on the front lines. It's not a very glorious origin. Through Princeton, what the test that becomes the SAT really launches in 1926, but it didn't go mainstream until really after World War II. And so at that point, after World War II, you know, for generations, college had been a dream, I think, for so many Americans, but it hadn't been even in the realm of possibility. World War II, GI Bill, we suddenly have more applicants than seats available. Colleges quickly become very selective. And part of the origin is actually really good. You know, and instead of just the well-connected being admitted, part of the idea with the standardized test, with the original SAT, which was designed to be an aptitude test, and we can get into that in just a few minutes. Part of the idea was that it would not, it would level the playing field. It would provide a way for those who are not well-connected to have a fair shot at Harvard as well. I think that benefit to it has been lost, especially now as the SAT is no longer an aptitude test that defers to curricular, you know, diversity. but now is a Common Core aligned public school achievement test that I think is actually very influential in driving a particular set of academic standards or curriculum nationwide.
So it was originally tied to the military, right? Okay, so they were testing for a very different kind of aptitude than what we typically think of now with standardized tests, right?
Yeah, and we're, you know, this is tied as well to kind of the heyday of IQ testing as well. And, you know, there's something very dangerous, you know, about this. I think, you know, one of the things you see about the SAT is how deep it can. I remember my score. I won't tell you my score, but I remember my SAT score. And I remember that having a really big impact of the way I saw myself as a 17, 18 year old high school junior or senior. That is not a good thing. At the same time, especially some of the aspects of the old SAT analogies, logic questions, these are questions that can allow a student who has had a great academic formation, who has a well-trained mind, who can connect ideas together. It allows them to demonstrate that to colleges in a way that can't be done quickly. And you know, from the college perspective, you know, when you're processing sometimes tens of thousands of applications and they want to do it in a way that's just and fair, it's hard to imagine a scenario, you know, where they're not using some standardized tests in at least some capacity.
Right. Now, what you mentioned in that, you know, quick historical scan of where all of this originated, at least in the United States, I think there's probably even more history further back than that. But now we've gone from standardized testing just for college admission to standardized testing really across the board and across all age ranges. Mm-hmm. My wife and I both were K-12 school teachers for years in a classical school. But now we homeschool our four kids. My wife does most of the heavy lifting there, of course.
As does mine.
Yeah. But in the state of North Carolina where we are, your students every year have to take a standardized test and you have to keep those records. And so now you're talking about standardized testing, which began for military purposes and then college entrance exams. And now it's backed all the way down to, you're talking about 6-7-year-olds taking hours and hours worth of standardized tests in a lot of cases every single year. Mm-hmm. And in some schools, multiple tests, right? So, how did we go from the origins of an aptitude test for the military or for college acceptance to how it's being used now? It's a very different animal now.
Right? Yeah. And I think what you're asking is a great fundamental question about what has happened overall to American education, that mainstream education has gotten so far from the idea that we're talking about the cultivation of the human person, that it's all about outcomes. It's all about, you know, if education is purely utilitarian, what can I get from this? You know, it would make sense that we would look for more and more of those kind of quantitative results. You know, if the purpose of education is that you cultivate virtue in young people, that they become kind and empathetic and honest, then naturally we're not going to see this emphasis on standardized testing. And I think part of what we want to do at CLT is actually reduce the amount of standardized testing that kids are getting. At the end of the day, you know, these tests at the state level with SAT, with ACT, it's almost impossible, Brian, to exaggerate the power and influence of these tests in driving curriculum. You know, I mean, when we get a chance, and you can imagine this, when we get a chance to sit down with the college and present, the first thing we always start off with is the very same hypothetical every time. We say, look, if SAT and ACT were tests that required fluency with the Western canon, required the ability to read and understand philosophy, classical literature, ethical texts, religious texts, what would curriculum be like nationwide if that was the SAT and ACT? And very quickly, they go, oh, wow, it'd be totally, totally different. And it's true with any state-required test as well. It's a way of controlling education. It's why both parties fight over it. And it's going to take, I think, an act of God for us to get out of this current situation that we're in. And I think it's a reason, too, why parents are fleeing out of the away from the educational establishment. And they're going to homeschool options. They're going to these great new classical Christian schools. And I think we're going to see more and more of this, that as the establishment becomes more and more desperate to keep control, they're going to double down on the testing. But I think we're going to keep seeing parents that want the best for their kids. They're going to keep fleeing away from it.
Now, so there seems to be at least an admission on the part of some of those that you've talked with that the testing is driving curriculum, right? Yeah. It's determining curriculum. So what other effects have you seen, or what other correlation or connection have you seen between the way standardized testing is done now and what goes on in the classroom or in school districts at large? Because I know that you're in the work that you do, you have access to kind of a greater sampling than most people would about what's really going on. I mean, most of us, we see how it affects our children. We see how it affects the students in our classroom. If you're a teacher, you might know how it affects the way that you have to teach, you know, teaching to the test and being measured and assessed by the test scores and so on. But what other trends are you seeing or effects are you seeing in the classroom or in schools at large?
Yeah. And that's a really great question. And I think to answer that also, just as an educator, I spent eight of 10 years teaching in the public school arena. I think the number one problem in education right now is complacency among students. And when you got a curriculum of every transcendental idea, every discussion of truth and beauty and why am I here, then students are bored. They should be bored. And you see, you know, we've done very extensive audits on SAT and their source material. 0% of authors are coming from a Christian worldview. Are philosophers, 0%. And so there's a filter. These thinkers are actually being censored. I'm confident it's the same from the big state test as well. And so if it doesn't matter if a student, can read religious texts, can read and understand philosophy, can read and understand ethical texts, if that stuff isn't going to show up on a test, it's very unlikely that teachers are going to focus on it much in the classroom as well. And therefore, all of the great questions that were central to the very foundations of education in the West, questions about existence, a focus on astronomy, questions about the telos, the happy life, the good life, those are all removed. And what you get instead, you know, of undermining of the student, that their chief aim in life is to, you know, be a cog in a big economic machine, then they have every reason to be bored and depressed, even out of their minds. And so I think, yeah, this is very much tied together. And it's part of what CLT wants to do by getting in there, offering kids a better student experience, but also saying, no, you know, 2,500 years ago, the right questions were being asked. They actually knew a lot more about educating a young person and fostering wonder and curiosity than the educational establishment knows today, which really, and this is not, you know, just CLT saying it. This is kind of almost mainstream criticism. The Atlantic wrote an article on this 2 years ago that almost every step from kindergarten now through 12th grade kind of crushes curiosity and wonder, fascination with the world. And it's absolutely tied to standardized testing.
Right. I mean, you have, and of course, some of this does vary by school districts or individual schools. But we're talking about big general trends here, of course. So I know that there are end of class tests or EOCs, there are end of grade tests, EOGs, to determine whether students can move on. Yeah. There's annual standardized testing, or in some systems, it's like every 2 or 3 years. Then you have the college entrance exams, SAT, SAT. Yeah. You've got AP exams, which are also standardized and are tied to college credit and college entrance. And it all comes back to there are two main concerns that I have here. And I, you know, taught in classical schools to high school students for over 10 years, was head of upper school. I still work with tons of classical schools around the country, but two main concerns, the really cynical, frustrated part of me goes, this is really about money. And you mentioned that, you know, that it's part of placing students in the as cogs in a giant economical machine. I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'll just say all the ugly stuff. I mean, if the College Board, which produces most of these standardized tests, or a lot of them, can be considered a nonprofit, then all bets are off, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's astronomical, you know, what they're raking in from these things. But the other part of it, the more pastoral shepherding side of me as an educator, I noticed this massive undercurrent of anxiety driving it all. You know, I can't tell you how many discussions I've had with students and parents, essentially trying to talk them off the ledge because they're so anxious about their test scores, about how it's going to affect their child's future and so on. And I know this is a tough question, but how do we begin to combat that?
Yeah.
What would you say to parents and students who are facing all of this anxiety and fear that the world of standardized testing is causing?
You know, Brian, if we could go back for just a second, you mentioned money a minute ago, and I would love to address that head on. You know, that College Board, a company, a nonprofit, you know, they do $1.2 billion per year. Currently, SAT and ACT are really fighting over big state contracts, which is why they're both Common Core aligned assessments at this point. If you think about the history of College Board, 120 years, I doubt that any entity in American education or history has done more to further the radical secularism of American education. And you think about what the collective Christian response has been on both the secondary side and on the college side. It has been to simply write College Board big checks, right? Colleges do it to acquire names for direct marketing from College Board. Secondary schools do it through testing, through PSAT, through AP. And so it's an interesting dynamic here where College Board, I think, has done a lot to undermine the value of Christian education. And at the same time, Christians collectively continue to funnel hundreds of millions of dollars to College Board every year. And so I certainly don't want to shy away from that argument or that thought that this is about money. And instead of having this money in any way reinvested back into, I mean, you think about what could Christians do instead with the hundreds of millions that go to College Board every year? You could have a great classical Christian school in the heart of every inner city in America. That would be a better use of the funds than what we're currently doing. So just some thoughts about money. Happy to go back there in a minute. But the question of student anxiety, you know, I think this is for me as the founder of CLT, as a co-founder, but in terms of the test itself, of kind of having this idea, CLT was launched originally for the purpose of seeing the influence of these tests on curriculum. That and also the way that College Board, even when you take the test, even if you're a super duper high flyer and you have a 1580, I know students who had a 1600 who still got rejected from MIT and Harvard, that it still doesn't do its actual job, which is simply differentiating among, you know, top students anyway. The very hardest aspect of this is when I connect with a student or parent who has been very discouraged about their score. I don't know that there is an easy way to deal with that. And I think that that's what makes me question, of course, standardized testing altogether. The flip side of that, I think, is that it is real accountability in some ways. I think for the parent who has been homeschooling for years, wants something external, wants something concrete to get a good sense of how they're doing. And with a standardized test that has tens of thousands of students nationally using it, they can get some perspective on how they've done. Maybe that's not the right perspective because that is in comparison to other students. So I don't know. I think over-testing, of course, I think it kills everything that is good in education. I think as long as companies like College Board and ACT exist, I am confident that CLT can offer something a lot better, that's a better student experience. And we do everything we can on our end to downplay the actual importance of the score. You know, Brian, for the colleges, SAT and ACT, CLT as well, are enrollment engines as much as tests. Colleges reach out to us almost every day, you know, wanting to connect with the kinds of kids who take the CLT. Well, those are typically great homeschool kids. They're typically kids coming from great classical Christian schools. These kids show up on campus regardless of their score, and they stand out. They lead debates. They lead discussions. Teachers go back to admissions and they say, where did we get that student? This kid's incredible. And then admissions goes back to, you know, the Geneva School or Veritas, and they want to recruit more. So these students from the classical renewal movement now are showing up in waves at colleges, and colleges are impressed, and they want to connect with more of these students as well, regardless of the test score. So, you know, I'm certainly very sympathetic to this, the argument. I know the damage that it can do. I think part of it is the parents' job to say, you know what, this captures something about this given moment, about where you're at academically. Much of the CLT can be prepped for in the same way SAT and ACT. Kids who read a ton, they do very, very well on the verbal section of the CLT. Kids who don't read hardly at all don't do well. I think part of it is just that hard feedback that's unavoidable. And then part of it, again, like you said, I think is anxiety producing, and it runs the risk of killing the very best aspects of education. And so I personally, as the president of CLT, want to be all ears and listening to parents and doing everything we can to minimize the kind of anxiety that this can produce when it is when it can be such high stakes for kids.
Right. I think if we understand, just to kind of piggyback on what you were saying, that if we understand that standardized testing really, it's a business, and yes, it is a gigantic business, right?
Yes.
So given that, you have to understand that when your child sits down to take one of the grade level tests, or, you know, if you're worried about SAT, ACT scores, then you have to understand that you're buying a product.
Mm-hmm.
And all the parents who have been convinced and students who've been convinced that I got to have, you know, 87 AP courses in order, yeah, for my child to get into a good college, you've just bought a product.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a sales pitch, right? And you can look at any commercial for any product and know that one of the ways they want to sell you something is through fear, through anxiety. Yeah. If you, yeah, don't buy this, then something bad will happen.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's a logical fallacy, but we fall for it. And so I think that's one thing that I would encourage parents to remember as well, and students too, is that you have to temper your expectation, and you have to really back off of the anxiety and fear, because as you said, this, your test scores are basically a snapshot.
Yeah.
Right. And that's even with a well done test,
mm-hmm,
which, you know, frankly, is assuming a lot in the world of standardized testing, right? But even if the tests were really well done, it's a snapshot. It's not, mm-hmm, the rest of your life. It's not a measure of who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not a measure of, you know, the growth of a soul and wisdom and virtue.
Yeah.
So, but I think all of that is very helpful. I mean, we have to really rid ourselves of this anxiety and fear that drives so much of this. That's sort of some counsel to parents and students. But given, as you said, you work with a lot of colleges, you have contact with a lot of colleges, you have a lot of contact with headmasters and, yeah, schools around the country. So let me give you an opportunity to speak directly to school leaders who might be listening as well, because they're involved in making a lot of decisions when it comes to standardized tests and the way that, you know, which ones their students will take, how often, and so on. So what advice would you give to school leaders as they're navigating through these waters and guiding parents and students through standardized testing? What can they do to make things better?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Brian. And one more comment with anxiety. One way that we try to address this through setting up our platform, and we have some parents who take advantage of this. Students don't ever need to know their actual score, even CLT students. A parent can, especially for our CLT 10, which is our alternative to the PSAT, parent can register the student, administer it to them, and the score itself can be kept out of the line of vision of the student entirely. And that's something, you know, I do webinars quite a bit with parents and try to just let them know all the options they have. And, you know, for some kids, if it's going to be this tremendously discouraging point that's just going to breed more anxiety, we wanted to set things up in a way that could keep the score from them at all, but may still be helpful to the parent in identifying what do we really need to work on at home. And so still provide, pass on the value without passing on the anxiety. Yeah, is part of our goal. Yeah. So the question about, heads of school, and so this is a big way that we've kind of shifted over the past year and a half. When we first started with CLT, we got colleges to change their admission standards. We went to missionally aligned colleges first, and we made the case of saying, hey, here's how influential these tests are in driving curriculum. Got a few colleges to adopt, and then word started to spread very slowly at first about CLT as a third option, just directly to students. Over the past year and a half, what we're doing is working directly with heads of school, and they're using the test in this dual capacity of one as an internal metric for academic progress. And so when I was at a secondary school, I remember the day very well every year when the PSAT scores would come out. And our school would use that to get insight into the student body, into, you know, potential for different school students in terms of scholarships. But it wasn't showing anything about the things our school cared about most. And so I think because the CLT specifically has passages drawing from classical literature, philosophy, religious text, logic on the math side, that we're able to pass on something that's helpful to the head of school that has nothing to do with the college entrance exam. For them, it's simply an added benefit that they can use it in that capacity as well. And what we say as well, if, you know, the first time head of school say, you know what, we realize that schools are very data driven. They want insight into their students, and so we offer it for free for the first year. Try CLT out. Let us know if we've been able to show you something about your school you didn't previously know. If it's helpful, use it again in the future. If not, you know, no worries at all. So so we have more and more secondary schools that are reaching out to us, especially as more colleges come on board. And that's one of the ways we really want to be of service. Let them offer the test to their kids in school, 2 hours, same day results. They get all the analytics the same week for the heads of school, whereas a lot of these testing companies, it's 3 or 4 months sometimes where they get any of the insight. And you can imagine at that point when they say, oh, wow, we need to do some serious work in geometry. If it's 3 or 4 months down the road, it might be summer break already and it's kind of a moot point.
Right, right. So now let's transition into kind of ending on some good news. Ending on a positive note, or ending with some good news, I should say. So what trends are you noticing? Any encouraging trends or shifts that you're noticing in the world of standardized testing?
You know, there's been huge changes, and I think College Board, to their credit, I think has is doing everything I think in their power right now to address some of the historic problems. So I, you know, mentioned early on that the original, one of the benefits, you know, right after World War II was that it was trying to level the playing field and saying, you know, it's not just going to be the well-connected anymore that get into Harvard, but we're going to try to use something that levels the playing field. As it's been demonstrated over time, you know, that these tests often perpetuate the existing discrepancies between different demographic groups. You know, one of the big criticisms is that it keeps those, you know, in power and keeps those who are on the outside on the outside. College Board has done a lot recently, I think, to address those issues. And especially, I think, with the test optional movement, there's 800 colleges now that are not requiring a SAT or ACT score for admission. I think that's good news. CLT, we love the test optional movement. And for a lot of students, submitting a score is a great way to put your best foot forward to a college. For some students, that's not your best way to put your best foot forward and to communicate something about what you can do or your academic formation. And so I think we're a little weird as a standardized testing company that wants to see the test optional movement grow. I think that's partly our commitment to not wanting to be a source of anxiety for students. We absolutely feel like we can be the best way to showcase the academic ability of a lot of these young people coming from these great classical schools. But I think that's a really encouraging sign as well. The other one I wanted to mention, Brian, and this I think solves a problem that's been present for a long time is writing. And so I look at the writing at some of the students that have been submitting essays already, and I'm blown away. I think that they're doing postgraduate level writing as juniors and seniors in high school. These kids coming from these classical schools, what we have done on the CLT is there's an optional essay, but we never grade it. We never grade it. So College Board, ACT, they grade your essay. We've read that on average, an essay gets about 30 seconds. So they're not grading it really well or very thoroughly. But what we do instead is we allow the student to send their response along with the essay prompt directly to colleges. And that way, the admissions office gets a real sample of student writing. And so the problem, you know, especially with selective colleges over the past 20, 30 years is that you know, for this the essay, everybody knows that, you know, students are having tutors and parents. The essay is essentially copy edited, you know, 20 times before it actually gets sent to the colleges. And so there's less and less value placed on the student essay. But right. If you could offer them an actual sample of an unedited student essay that they did in real time in a proctored environment, that's something that we're really excited about. We just rolled that out this past year. The colleges have been excited about it. The students have been excited about it. I think a lot of these kids are excited to show off their writing ability. And so that's been fun. And it's something that you can only do with technology. And so there's really no way apart from being on a online platform that you could have this system where kids are, you know, and they can actually go back, they can look at their essay. If they like it, great. It's entirely under their power to send it to colleges or not. But we're hearing a lot of great things, both from the colleges and the students and the parents right now about this new opportunity to show off their writing skills.
That's great. Those are very encouraging trends. And I think that's a great resource that you're giving to students who are taking the CLT to help them stand out a bit from the rest of the crowd. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been very informative, from the history and development of standardized testing to, you know, what's going on now and then how we react to it. Those of us in the world of classical education, whether we're in schools or homeschools, sometimes it's hard to know our place in all of that and how to respond to it. And so this has been really encouraging, really helpful. Thank you so much for the work you're doing and thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you, Brian, for having me. I think I'm a huge fan myself of Circe podcast. And I think the last one I listened to was you and Matt Bianco and Andrew talking about feelings in stories, which I think is actually far more interesting than standardized testing. So thank you as well for the great work and just how supportive Circe has been to CLT over the past couple of years. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Jeremy.